survey were great.
Oh, good. I didn't get to answer it, though, but okay. That's probably for the best.
We got 13 responses. We're good.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I need to make a theme song for that for next time.
Or not.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 302.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, and the AU Wishbone family via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, before we get into the grim and gritty business of tonight, I gotta point out to our listeners, because I did just put like 72 hours of work into it, we have a new website finally. I've been talking about it for a couple of months. We have a new website at www.plexico.net. You can still go to all of our others, you can go to the Podbean page, you can go to whatever, but I made just a central one-page website at www.plexico.net, and it has links to basically everything right there on one page. So like if you're looking for the AU Wishbone, I've got a player that plays the show there. If you're looking for any of the other White Rocket shows, I've got a player that plays the shows there. I've got links to the Podbean pages for both. It's got a link to the Patreon page if you're looking for that. It's got links to our Auburn books. It's got links to my other books. It's got links to upcoming appearances, like if I'm going to do conventions, or if you or I are going to be at a bookstore or something, or your dad's going to be somewhere, it's got an appearances page. It's just got everything in one simple location. So if you want to bookmark that or note it, folks, www.plexico.net. I think you need the www before it to make sure it goes there. Some of them, you don't need that, but you need to put www.plexico.net. And it will take you to the central hub for everything. So it's easy to find all those things now. I don't have to send you to 15 different websites. Okay, I wanted to get that out of the way before we got all into our business, and then I wouldn't feel like talking about it again. John, the Auburn Tigers played a tackle football game down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana on Saturday. And I'm just going to say a couple of things up front, and then you can drive the fabled bus for a little bit, because I don't have a whole lot really to say. I allowed myself, you remember, all right, let's walk it back. Let's take this chronologically. Before the season started, we named three games, and I said, I need to, for Auburn to win three of them, I'll be ecstatic. Two, I'll be happy. One of them, I'm not happy, and lose all three and I'm done, right? I think that's what I said. Does that sound familiar?
It does.
And those games were Clemson, LSU, and Alabama. Now, you remember that
Georgia was not in there?
No. Georgia was absolutely mandatory. Remember, we had a whole separate category for Georgia. Georgia was absolutely, positively mandatory. No ifs, ands, or buts. We had to beat Georgia. In other words, if we won all three of those big games and still lost to Georgia, I'd be in a very, very, very bad mood. So it was like in a category by itself. We had to beat Georgia. There was no compromises on that. That being said, we then needed to win, like I said, at least one, preferably two, and we'd love to have three of those other three. Well, after the Clemson loss, I was not happy. And I was starting to get pretty fed up. But then we went on kind of a run. And I foolishly allowed myself, there was always a voice at the back of my head saying, don't get carried away. Missouri sucks. Ole Miss sucks. You know, Mercer is Mercer. Let's not get carried away here. Mississippi State, that was a really good win. But, I mean, there was a voice that kept saying, don't get carried away. Look at the competition level. Don't get too carried away. And my pregame prediction for the LSU game was 23-20 Auburn. And in fact, if that LSU touchdown that was not actually a touchdown was called back and they kicked a field goal instead, it would have been 23-20 Auburn. But that was my pregame prediction because I was – and that just shows you – the reason I say that is that just shows you where my head was as the game was getting close is I was starting to realize, I'm thinking that we're getting all of it carried away. Well, now we've lost to Clemson and we've lost to LSU. We've still got to play Texas A&M, Georgia, Alabama. I don't see us winning any of those three, just like I said back after the Clemson game. And so I was very, very depressed and upset Saturday evening. I went to a movie to take my mind off of it. I said, let's just see what happens. Let's just see what happens to my mindset. Rest of Saturday night, what happens to me on Sunday, what happens to me on Monday, because fortunately, you and I have a couple of days to digest things before we have to come on the air and talk about it. I couldn't have talked about it on Saturday. I couldn't have done a show on Saturday. I wouldn't have wanted to yesterday, but by today, I'm at peace. I've decided how I feel. I'm no longer searching. I'm no longer trying to, read the tea leaves of my own soul and figure out how I really feel about things. I have found peace. I know how I feel about things now, and I am content with it, with what I feel, which I haven't said yet. So before I go any deeper into that, why don't you tell us your story, your odyssey starting Saturday afternoon and how you came to where you are right now, and then we can both kind of work through what our conclusions are, if you've drawn any.
I think, first of all, I think I have a more zen, as somebody said, Twitter or email log, that I had a more zen-like approach to dealing with Auburn games than other people do. And some of that is I'm older now, and I think I didn't used to have this view of the world. And some of it is like,
absolutely, me too.
I decided years ago that I was not going to let the result of college football games like ruined my life for long periods of time.
Sure.
And some of them still bother me. I mean, the Florida State game still bothers me, and the 87 or LSU game still bothers me. 88 LSU game. I mean, and but like the 2003 Georgia Tech game is one I particularly remember that just pushed me over the edge.
Yeah.
And really, really bothered me. Mm-hmm. And I was really angry about that game for a long time. And this game, I'm very unhappy about it. I'm upset that Auburn lost. I'm upset at the decisions of the coaches made during the game, and we're going to talk through that, and some specific things that happened. I'm unhappy, and it was really, really, really bad, and I think Auburn losing, I think Auburn's a better team than LSU, and LSU had home field advantage and that evened the scales a lot, but I still think today that Auburn's a better team than LSU. I think if they met on a neutral field tomorrow, Auburn would win. But I think that in that game, in that stadium, in that moment, Auburn lost, and they lost. One of the main reasons they lost was decisions by the head coach. And I think that he's never going to escape that. This team is talented enough that it is possible that they go win the rest of these games. I don't think that's going to happen. I think A&M looks like a toss-up kind of game now. And, you know, Georgia and Alabama at home, I think on this team's best day, they could, you know, they could win either one of those games. But certainly the Alabama game doesn't look very likely right now. So, you know, I think I get it. I mean, I understand. It is, in the big, I think Jerry Hannon's column yesterday was really good about it, about talking about how Gus, when he first came in, was kind of a swashbuckler taking chances.
Absolutely.
And we love that about him. And now he and we got a question, a month ago, and it was actually, I remember this, it was from, but the person that sent in the question was my dad, and he asked about Gus being too conservative now. Mm-hmm. And that's what we saw Saturday, is a coach who was playing not to lose. But once we got ahead in the game, he was playing not to lose. And there's a, if you listen to the solid verbal, it's a thing they, a term they use to describe when Alabama gets ahead of teams. They call it a crock potting.
Right.
Because they put you in the crock pot and cook you, slow cook you. Mm-hmm. And I think that was Gus's idea of what we were going to do. But Auburn isn't that team. No. And we didn't execute it that way. And I think when, and you could point to specific moments in the game when this happened, when Gus ordered them to basically go to, you know, late in the first half, basically to go to sit on the ball and run the clock out for the rest of the game, that the offense kind of went into neutral and never could get it back into gear. And, you know, we were like a boxer who's been beating the crud out of the other guy. Then we just went and stood in the middle of the ring with our hands up and, you know, guarding ourselves. So we didn't take any hits. And we let the other guy get back up on his feet and get himself together and then come after us. And that was the difference. Like, if we'd have kept attacking, I think we'd have been fine. But we didn't. We played not to win. We played not to lose, and therefore we lost. And I think, you know, it's a real issue when you're the offensive genius, and we'd all feel better if Chip Lindsey were calling the plays and your headphone was disconnected. I think that's a problem. And I am not a Gus play calling conspiracy theorist, but I 100% believe a lot of those calls the second half were him. And there's specific ones that we'll talk about tonight that I can point to. So, I mean, the results are what the results are. And on some level, it doesn't matter what I think about it. Recruiting is still at a very high level, and that matters a lot. Here's what I was saying a minute ago. I think Auburn is a better team. I think Auburn beating Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Arkansas, on some level, we're supposed to do that right now. Like, we're better. We have more talent than all of those teams. If we lose to those teams, or Missouri or whoever, it's a problem. So, you know, going and beating those teams, at this point in the where we are with Gus and our rivals and stuff, that doesn't buy him anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in their mind, it buys them something, you know, that we've won. What do we want? Four SEC games? Three and one?
Yeah.
And, but it doesn't buy him anything, because we lose to LSU and we lose to Georgia and we lose to Alabama. Mm-hmm. And that's the games that people care about. So when you're better than those other teams and you beat them, you're not earning anything with the fans. And when you continually lose to these other teams, then you're putting yourself in a hole. And we'll talk through the other things, the specific parts, because we got a gazillion list of questions we need to get to. But that's kind of where I am. I think the results are good. You know, if they turn it around and they win these games, say they beat Texas A&M and they beat Georgia and they lose to Alabama, you know, they will be 9-3, and I think Gus will probably save his job. And I think a lot of Auburn fans will be unhappy about that. But I think that'll be what it'll be. And I think, you know, If we beat A&M and lose to Georgia and Alabama and finish 8-4, I think a lot of Auburn fans better be prepared to keep Gus as the coach, because I think that's what's going to happen. However much this current loss from this week is like a weight around his neck for the rest of his career, I think that's what's going to happen. And that may make you unhappy as a fan, but because there's a whole other dimension to the, we can get into the whole questions about Gus's future too, but the whole other dimension of that is the Jacobs thing. Jacobs is on the hot seat, and you cannot hire a football coach at Auburn University with, you know, either an athletic director who's on the hot seat or on his way out the door, or some kind of interim athletic director. I want the athletic director who's going to be here the next 10 years to hire that coach and to own it. So the whole question about Jacob's future makes the Gus thing more complicated, but that's kind of where I am.
Well, let me respond to a couple of things. One, I think that if Auburn and LSU played again this week, LSU would win by double digits, because now they have confidence and know what to do. I think that they were a much better team after the first quarter. And without us getting off that fast start and hitting that miracle wide open play to Hastings, then it would have been much worse. I think that it wasn't just the crock potting that didn't work. I think that the play calling, particularly in the second half on offense, was right back. They just pulled the Clemson playbook back out, which is ineffectual runs up the middle and bombs and sacks. I mean, where were the slants? Where were the screen passes? Where was the creative stuff that worked so well in the first quarter that's been working so well in the other games? They just went to the same old crap. In the first half, I remember the announcer on television saying, LSU has no answer for the Wildcat with Kerryon Johnson. I don't believe we ran that play once in the second half.
I think LSU adjusted that, but you're right, we didn't run it. And I know you're right about the play calling. We went back to the Clemson thing. A couple of people pointed this out, Brian Matthews and Justin Ferguson. We ran, starting late in the beginning of the second half, or late in the second quarter, we ran the ball 17 times on first down.
Oh, my goodness. What is that?
And not just that we ran the ball 17 times. We were, probably 12 of those were the same inside zone play to carry on, where, you know, Harris, the tight end, you know, started out wide and then came over close, so we ran behind Braden Smith. If you'd run a play action on one of those, you'd have killed the entire – everybody in LSU would have been fooled. Like, they knew what was coming.
Absolutely. I mean, and we're not getting paid big bucks to know that, and we know that. I mean, how –
That's right.
And
the difference between the Clemson game and this game was, in the Clemson game – Stidham didn't throw the ball. In this game, he threw the ball into double coverage. The receivers were equally covered, probably more covered in this game.
Yeah.
But in the Clemson game, he held on to the ball and got sacked. And in this game, he threw the ball anyway, and it was incomplete.
We were lucky it was incomplete.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. I mean, LSU can play defensive back football. They have players back there. They're not a crap team in the secondary, not by any means.
One of the plays we ran in the second half that wasn't a run straight up the middle was an old school reverse that was the slowest developing play we've run all year. And there was like three LSU guys standing in the backfield waiting for him by the time he got to the other side of the field. We lost yardage on that play.
Even in the years when we had Cam and we had Nick Marshall and Trey Mason, even in those years, every now and then Gus pulls out that, look how clever I am. Look what I came up with, a salt shaker and a pepper shaker and a ketchup bottle at Waffle House last night. Hey, y'all, watch this. And it never works. It never works. It always is slow and ponderous, and the defense is just waiting for it. When we have those spectacular players at quarterback and running back, sometimes we don't really lose yardage on it. But whenever I see one of those slow-developing, multiple handoff, fake in the backfield, Statue of Liberty, whatever plays, as soon as I start seeing that thing develop, I start thinking, okay, what are we going to do on 2nd and 14 to get around this, to get over this? So, but you're talking about the record. 7-5, I think right now, if we are fortunate to beat Arkansas on Saturday, then we're looking at 7-5. If we have, and it's certainly conceivable that we could have a meltdown and lose to Arkansas, particularly if we let LSU beat us again, as they say, mentally. If we lose to Arkansas, I don't see us doing better than 6-6, which is, you know, that's pretty much where I had us after Clemson. And again, I feel foolish for letting the outcome of the last few weeks change my mind a little bit, because clearly what we are right now, we're a team that can play good defense as long as they're not on the field all the time. And we're a team that can run the ball if the passing game is working. And we're a team that the passing game works if the other side, if the other defense is just not quite good enough to thoroughly defend our receivers. So against teams that our receivers can get a little separation and can get open and catch the ball, then everything works and we win huge. But if we can't get any separation and our receivers can't catch the ball, then the passing game goes away, the running game goes away, and then eventually the defense goes away, like dominoes falling. So we either win by 20 or 30 or we lose by 10.
I think it's simpler than that, which I mean, what you were saying is, we can beat teams without good defenses, and we cannot beat teams with good defenses.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Yeah.
All right. We asked for listener questions, and the listeners responded. So we're ditching the regular show format and diving in. We have many to answer here, and I think they will help flesh out this discussion.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Let it fly, boy. Let it fly.
All right, first one is from Chris Thrash, who says, I flew across the country because I wanted to witness us beat LSU and Baton Rouge in my lifetime.
Oh, man.
But prayers for you, Chris Thrash. He says, the only bright side is that we might have saved Coach O his job. He says, did Les Miles put some voodoo on us at halftime?
It wasn't Les.
And he says, on a scale of 1 to 10 – with 1 being met and 10 being terrified, how worried should I be at a lot of this academic fraud story? I would say 1.
I know nothing about that.
There was a story, your favorite reporter, Mark Schlabaugh, story about a guy that was on the team in 2015 and in 2016 when he was, you know, finished with his eligibility and back at school finishing his degree. A tutor or somebody overheard him say he got help cheated on an online test. That's the story.
A student cheating on an online test? That never happens at my college.
Says the professor. All right. Next question. Bradley Blackman says, I don't know where to begin. Is it possible Gus loses the team after this game? If so, when does this end? The end of the season? The bye week? He says there could be a lot of vacancies this year. Burt at Arkansas, Jones at Tennessee, Odom at Missouri. He said maybe someone, Stoops, Malzahn.
I think
possibly McElwain at Florida, and Ole Miss has to hire a permanent coach.
I think Sumlin's already saved his job.
I don't think that's not over yet. How important is the timing, and where do we turn? A young, energetic up-and-comer, or to turn someone more experienced in the SEC? If the latter, who is that individual?
That's the real question. That's the real question of tonight. I mean, that's the magic. That's the one that makes the duck fall down out of the ceiling with a little sign, you know, the magic word. But let me just say what was the first part of his question? Because I got all excited about the second part.
Is it possible Gus loses the team after
loses the team? Well, I think Arkansas really comes along at a good time here, because thank goodness we don't have a break this week, because that would be bad to stew for 2 weeks on this. But if we can go out there and play well against Arkansas, then I think he won't lose the team, and we will at least be trying the rest of the season. And then we've got a shot to go. We'll be 7-5, 8-4 if we can somehow beat Texas A&M. Although I have to point out, and I was tweeting about this extensively over the weekend, I'm not sold on Georgia yet that they're any different from us. Georgia could very well be the same exact team, because all that Georgia's played so far, other than Notre Dame, is teams. It's the same teams we've played pretty much, and they're doing the same things to them that we were doing to those teams. So when they played a tougher team like Notre Dame, they won by 1 point. Well, we lost to Clemson by 8 points. So right now, Georgia seems like the exact same team we are. I need to see Georgia play at LSU or play Alabama. You know, I need to see, and they're not. They don't play anybody like that. So
they play Florida next week. We'll know a little bit more after that. And they play South Carolina in a week or two. Yeah. That South Carolina's defense is real, at least.
Well, what I'm saying is we may not know how good Georgia really is until Alabama beats them by 30 in Atlanta. But the second part of the question, though, is who we should hire, and that's the really the tough. That's the question that I was trying to answer after Clemson, and I dusted that back off. You remember the names that I came up with after the Clemson game. Is James Franklin at Penn State. I don't know if we could get the Penn State coach away, but I think
he just signed like a $10 billion a year deal. Like, he's getting more than Saban now.
Good gosh. Well, he deserves it. He's a good coach. I don't know. I mean, it seems like last year was the year all the available coaches were available, and everybody that was really desperate snapped them up last year. I mean, even LSU couldn't get, you know, the one they really wanted last year. So I don't know who we get.
I mean, let's start this way. Like, how many of the SEC coaches do you think are going to get fired this year?
Tennessee for sure. Ole Miss and Missouri for sure. So let's say.
Bert. Bert, maybe?
Maybe. Let's throw him on the pile. I don't think someone gets fired.
I think someone is going to save his job. But again, he's still got to play us, and he's got to play LSU, who they've never beaten.
That's just funny. And they're not going to this year the way it's looking.
So, again, and then I think someone could leave on his own. Like, he may leave. Like, if UCLA fires their coach, he may leave and go out there or something. Florida, you know, is kind of falling apart. It may not make a bowl.
Yeah.
They may fire McElwain. So,
wow.
That's a lot. They owe him a lot of money, but that's another one. Do you want me to run through who the coaches are? I'm not.
What you got?
Again, I think the Auburn job is more attractive than some of these other jobs. Like, I think we could hire a guy who's coaching somewhere else right now. I think guys that are going to get head coaching jobs after this season, there's no particular order here. Scott Frost at Central Florida, who's a Nebraska quarterback, has rebuilt them from zero to a team that's it's going to be in a New Year's Day bowl game.
I would love to have him, but I feel like he's going to go back to Nebraska.
I think he'd rather go somewhere where he can win than Nebraska. I think that's a guy that SEC schools are going to call. Willie Fritz was at Georgia Southern, is at Tulane, is really, really creative with his offense, a really fun coach. I think a lot of people would like him. I don't think Auburn's going to hire this guy, but the guy who's now the offensive coordinator at Penn State, Joe Moorhead, was the head coach at Fordham. He's going to get a head coaching job after this year, I think. You know, there's no young coaches that are sitting coaches around the country. Then I look around and I'm like, I mean, the guy they just hired at Purdue, who was at Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You're right in the sense that a lot of the teams that hired last year or the year before snacked up a lot of the young up and coming coaches. I'll give you the list of who this is easier. I'll tell you who we're not going to hire.
Right.
Okay. You ready for that? We are not going to hire Heath Evans.
No.
I don't want to hear an Auburn person say, wow, that was great. I want to be very clear about this. I do not want us to hire an Auburn person with any Auburn ties.
Yeah.
Okay. My criteria is this. I'm going to give you the criteria I had in 2012. And it's the same criteria if we get to that point and Gus is gone. It's very simple. I want the person who is best at coaching football games. I don't care where they're from or how – if they've ever lived in Alabama or if they've ever been on campus. I don't care. Okay? My list in 2012 was Chris Peterson, Gary Patterson, and then Gus. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the three guys that I wanted. And I don't think we ever called the first two.
No.
So we got to look around and find those kind of people. Let me think about it some more. I haven't really
me too.
Put my thinking cap on it because it's so far away.
How about he's at Oregon now. Taggart's done. He's gone.
No, he's that ship sailed. All right, we got a bunch more questions. Let's keep going. Derek Kane, stats don't lie. I feel that enough is enough. If you look at the stats, the writing is on the wall. Gus Malzahn will not meet our expectations simply because he has not met them in the past. We have played 60 games and we've won 40 of those games. We played 26 ranked teams and we've won 12 of those. So our winning percentage against ranked opponents is 46%. We played 13 top 10 opponents and won 4 of those. Mm. So for us to be consistently in the top 10 in recruiting, we're not simply living up to expectations of talent. This is not the players' fault. That's coaching.
That's exactly it. We've got the players. I would argue we're among the top three most talented teams in the league in terms of talent.
Oh, we are. Wardam Wade says, are we fairly certain that Gus took back over play calling after the first few drives of the second quarter? And did he actually do us a favor lest we get our hopes up between now and either A&M and Georgia? And he says, thanks. And he says, hashtag Team Van.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how people that haven't really been keeping up have gotten so confused. Like, I had people tweeting me after the LSU game saying, well, now are you, are you going to get off the Gus bus? Or are you still the one that's, you know, I'm like, dude, I'm the one that's been this season saying I'm off. I mean, I'm like, Team Van is team no, not more.
And I would tell people that on the Team John side, what I said was he has to prove it to me against a good defense. And just, what we saw Saturday was not that.
And I'm just out of patience. I'm just done. That's how I've been describing it all weekend. I'm just done. I am done. I have no more interest in this whole poop show. I'm done.
All right. Adam Hill says, Dear John Avan, the Gus Butch is in the ditch again. It's on fire, and an angry mob of Auburners are pouring napalm on it.
They are.
So, something has to change, and something has to go. Besides the opponent, what changes between now and Texas A&M that will restore your faith in Gus as one who can lead the Tigers to victory?
Nothing.
Again, we're not changing coaches midseason, so you could get over that right now if you think that's going to happen. Yeah. But also, we could beat Texas A&M if we played better. That's not, you know.
Well, we could beat LSU if we played better. And it's not even play better. It's run the offense better. I had this long debate this morning, even though I said I wasn't. He sucked me in, our dear Auburn Elvis, because he's good at that. He sucked me into like a four-way debate. And I finally had to just bail out because I had to go to work. He was trying to get me fired, I think. In fact, making me late for work, but other people carried on, but I kept saying it was all the fault of the defense. I'm like, I know the defense kind of, you know, gave up a couple of scores there, but if the offense can make first downs and stop punting the ball after three plays every down for the whole second half, we wouldn't have needed the defense to not give up a single blessed point, you know? I mean,
the defense gave up 20.
Yeah.
I mean, special teams gave up 7.
Sure. But if the offense is on the field more than 10 seconds in the second half, they wouldn't have given up. I mean, in the first half, the second quarter either. I mean,
I have been a staunch, you know, proponent of this Auburn defense, and they did not play their best game on Saturday.
No.
But it wasn't their fault, though.
I don't blame the Auburn defense for that loss.
Well, but they're again, Gus's thing after the game, there were two things he said. One was, it's all about execution, which, you know, people don't want to hear that. Mm. And then the other thing he said was, it's not the end of the world, which people don't want to hear that either.
No.
And I think that last comment, I think he was speaking to himself. I think he was trying to convince himself it's not the end of the world.
That's going to be on his coaching tombstone. That's the epitaph right there.
But the
it's going to say, it was the end of the world.
I, here's the thing with the execution thing. I went back and watched this football game again yesterday.
I'm sorry.
Masochism
is a fine thing, John. Don't be ashamed of your peculiarities.
When we're in the moment of the game, like
it's emotional.
It's emotional. I can't see what's happening all the time. I have to sit back and be clinical about it.
I'm the same way. I just didn't have any desire to flog myself with that.
I want to say this very clearly to people like that. So because I think people think, and some of this goes to what Auburn Elvis was saying, there were a lot of mistakes by Auburn football players on Saturday that did not have anything to do with coaching.
Yeah.
Okay. It is perfectly normal for a team to play worse than it has when you go on the road in a tough stadium like that against a good team. It is perfectly normal for players to make more mistakes and to not execute as well. Part of the job of the coaches is to prepare the team for that environment and to coach the team in a way that allows for those mistakes to happen and overcome them. But there were many, many specific individual plays that Auburn players failed to make in the moment, any one of which would have won the game. And I can name about 10 off the top of my head right here. But specifically, the dropped interception by Daniel Thomas, LSU scored a touchdown on that drive.
Yeah.
The failure to get the first down on third and one. And again, I'll blame that for coaching when we went at midfield and we didn't go for it. That was coaching. But then we punted the ball. And yeah, there were some blocks in the back, but we still didn't tackle the guy. The receivers dropped multiple passes. The LSU, you said this earlier, the LSU defensive backs owned our receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Davis is at home in the doghouse, apparently, didn't make the trip. I don't know whether he's going to make the trip to Arkansas. I don't know whether he's going to play again for Auburn.
I'm hearing stories, but yeah, go ahead.
So he didn't make the trip. So we started, Sal Canella. I don't think we threw the ball to Nate Craig Myers once.
Nope. Didn't know he was on the field.
Didn't know he was on the field, even though he's, maybe our best receiver. We threw the ball to Slayton 9 times. He caught one pass.
Wow.
Okay. Eli Stove dropped a touchdown in the end zone that hit him in the hands.
Yep.
Slayton passed. The defensive back wanted it more than him. And another play, the defensive back went and took the ball away from, cut in front of him. Slayton just stood there, waited for the ball to come to him. The defensive back was behind him and came in front of him and knocked the ball away. Hastings dropped the ball on a first down play.
Yep.
There were other plays the defensive players made on the fourth down and goal play that LSU scored a touchdown on the end round, Jeff Holland had the guy at his grasp and he got away. Yep. Like he should have finished that tackle and they don't score the first touchdown.
That's right.
So, and there were a couple other plays like that where we had guys in the backfield that we could not make the tackle or get the quarterback down. And the other one I would say is that Carlton Davis had a terrible game. The play he made diving to knock the ball away instead of just tackling the guy for a 2-yard game is on him.
Gave up a huge.
He chose to make the home run, spectacular play to try and get on ESPN SportsCenter or whatever, instead of letting the guy catch the ball and tackling him for a 2-yard gain, instead of give a 40-yard gain and they score a touchdown on that drive. So that's on him. That didn't have anything to do with the coaching of the offense, okay? These are things that are on specific Auburn players who didn't make their best plays. But the other part of that is, you have to know that as the coaches. It's on you. I mean, but there were very clearly specific things that had Gus Malzahn's name on them that went on in the second half of that game. You already talked about it, but specifically the late game decision on third and one. We ran the ball out of a formation that I'll send out a picture of it later. It was just like that stupid goal line Clemson play, okay?
Oh, God.
We brought in two wide receivers next to the formation. Do you know who they were? Sal Canella and Ryan Davis. They were standing like 1 foot away from the offensive tackle. And we ran the ball on their side with carry on, and he got nothing. How much difference do you think those two guys made on that side of the line?
Oh, I'm sure. But bringing them there,
there were all 11 LSU guys in the box waiting for us to run the ball in the third one play. We could have taken the wide receivers and put them at the freaking bench on the side, you know, all the way on the edge of the field, and made LSU take all their guys except five or six out of the box. We didn't do that. We brought them in close because on paper, like you're saying with the salt shakers, that looked like a good play. That was a Gus Malzahn play. 100. I would bet all the money I have that he drew up that play. And then on fourth and one at midfield with the game on the line, we punted the ball. That was the play where Gus was too conservative. We should have gone for it. Go, you know, let's go back to the Petway Wildcat, even like whatever. And so, anyhow, we got 50 more questions we got to get through, and I'm ranting here. So,
it's entertaining though, and it's true.
All right. I didn't finish Adam Hill's question. He said, why do you feel those fans who love Gus so much, yet hate the way he is coaching the team, want him to succeed more than anything, yet have been frustrated the last 3 years? The thought of firing Gus makes them feel Malzahn guilt. Why? And he says, to be clear, I have Malzahn guilt. I want a change, but the thought of firing him makes me feel guilty.
Well, he's been likable, and he got us the national championship game, and we had the miracle plays, and we loved 2013, and we kept feeling – it's like I've been saying for the last 3 years, you know, just one little thing here or there goes right, and we're back. We just keep thinking if we can see, this is the big revelation I had this week, and I had it after the Clemson game, and then I kind of put it away a little bit. Now I've got it back, and that revelation is this: it's not getting any better. Okay, we knew that there was one little thing wrong in 2014, and there was one little thing wrong at the big thing each year. You know, in 2014, oh, well, if the defense was just better, we'd be great. And in 2015, oh, well, if the quarterback was just better, we'd be great. And then last year, oh, if we just didn't have those dang injuries, we'd be great. And this year, it's like we've got mostly everything, and it's still not great. And, you know, I've gone from Malzahn guilt to Tommy Tuberville 2003-itis. Tommy Tuberville 2003-itis is, we've got a 2004 team, and we're playing like 2003, John. That's what I have.
So we're underachieving, in your opinion.
We know that this could be a 2004 team.
Yes.
And we're playing like freaking 8-5, 2003. Do you know what I did partway through the 2003 season? I started wearing black to games instead of orange and blue as just a protest. The only Auburn game I've ever left at halftime was 2003 at Georgia, because I knew it was bad and was not getting any better, and I was tired of being taunted by the Georgia student section around me, and I just left. I never leave Auburn games before they're over. It was my family at Columbia a couple of weeks ago. It was my family and this one Missouri family where the granddad had a headphones on and was like calling plays and stuff. Those were the two people in our entire upper deck when that game was over. The two sets of people. I don't leave them early, but this year I feel like 2003 all over again. I'm about to wear black on Saturday, and I'm not even going to watch the game. I'm not even going to watch
it. Really?
No, I'm going to record it, and if something spectacular happens, I'll eventually go back and watch it. But I just, you know, I'm like this. If we win, we win. If we don't, I don't even want to waste my day on it. I'd rather do something with my family. If we win, we should. If we win, that's my minimum expectation. And I don't want to base my entire weekend around my minimum expectation. There are better things I could be doing. There's a Formula One race this weekend. I'm going to have a lot better time watching that. I'm sure as heck not going to be miserable just because Lewis Hamilton wins.
What if Lewis Hamilton puts in first gear and just cruises around real slow, under control? Like Gus is on the crew chief radio.
Oh, God. Well, no, what's been happening this year is Max Verstappen crashes on the first lap every week, and I'm just like, Gus is his crew chief. But no, it'll be fine.
All right, this is a good question from Hunt Pro Throw, who says, long-time listener, first-time caller. When was the last time Auburn coaches won the battle of halftime adjustments? It seems like our MO is to come out playing well and then coast to victory or defeat without much change on offense either way.
Yeah, we coast to defeat. I like that. That's a new thing. Auburn likes to coast to defeat.
It's so true, though.
It's like
Auburn's coaches...
Wait. It's like North Carolina back when Dean Smith ran the box. It's like if Dean Smith got behind by 10 and then started running the box.
Well, or just ran the box the whole time, regardless of whether the other team was scoring or not.
Not even trying to score. You're just passing it around. It's all good. It's a passing game. We're just passing the ball.
Are Auburn's coaches lulled into thinking adjustments aren't needed when we put up record yardage in the first half, like at LSU last week? If so, why can't they seem to make in-game adjustments in the third or fourth quarter? Maybe it's an oversimplification, but from my couch perspective, simple adjustments could have resulted in wins versus Clemson and LSU this year and Clemson and Georgia last year.
Absolutely. Look, there's a bigger question here. This is kind of hard for me to fathom. I've been sort of tap dancing around this question for a couple of years now, and you and I have kind of halfway joked about it. I'm suddenly deadly serious about it, John. Auburn was much more creative, much more risk-taking, much more creative in plays and play calling and approach to the game, freewheeling, exciting. We were much more exciting under Gene Chizik. And at the time, we always thought, right? We were so sure. We always thought, oh, Gus is coming up with all this stuff. We probably would do even more of it, but Chizik probably is the one that's the wet blanket. Chizik's probably limiting how much we do. You know, I'm sure Gus just can't wait to get out from under Chizik so he can just do whatever he wants. You know what, John? I'm starting to think that Chizik is the one that was doing all that, and Gus wanted to be a head coach so he didn't have to do it anymore.
I don't think it's that Gus didn't want to do it anymore. I think it's the fear of failure and the pressure of success has made Gus tighten up over the years. I think the pressure of coaching at this level has forced Gus Malzahn to be a much less risk-taking person. I think he gets burned once now, even a little bit, and he retreats into the shell.
God bless him. I love him dearly. I hope that wherever he ends up next year or in a couple of years, I'll follow him and I'll root for him. I love him. I want him to do well. I wanted him to do well here. I'm just done. But let me say, I hope that wherever he ends up next, he says, screw it, and just is the Riverboat Gambler part two.
That's fair. This of all the evidence against Gus, okay, if you want to say that Gus is doing a bad job at Auburn, this question that Hunt Protho asked is the question.
Okay.
In the last six losses that Auburn has suffered, how many not counting last year's Alabama game, but the other six losses, so like the LSU, Clemson this year, Georgia, Clemson, A&M last year, and one before that. Maybe Georgia the year before. How many points is Auburn averaging in the second half of those games?
Averaging. Three?
Two and a half.
Oh, my goodness. I was just being comically low, and no, I was too high.
Two and a half. That is how many points we averaged in the second half of those losses. Okay.
All right.
So – it is exactly what you were saying about having a great plan and coming out and rolling with that great plan and doing good things. And it's just like we talked about the Georgia game. We score first in the first series every year, and then it's nothing. So it's this get out to a quick lead. But at this level of football, teams adjust.
Yeah.
The defensive coaches know what Gus likes to do, what Auburn likes to do, and they adjust.
And we don't.
And they adjusted on Saturday. And we don't have a plan B, and we don't adjust to their adjustments.
Let me just speak very quickly and very calmly and plainly to those of you out there that are still saying, well, let's just hang on here. I don't want to be too negative. I don't want to give up on Gus. Look, I was with you. I was there. I know how you feel. I've been defending Gus every breath for the last 3 years of this. I have been with him. You know, John, only Nixon could go to China. And that's because Nixon had credibility that he had never been hinted at a whiff of communism, right? He never had Nixon ever had a hint of anything but staunch anti-communism. So when Nixon went to China, you could take it to the bank that he knew what he was talking about and that he was in no way selling out or, you know, this was serious deal, okay? I have been there with you on the Gus Bus, folks, die hard, start to finish, and I am now going to China. Okay, I'm going to China. I am off the bus and on the way to China. And if they've got a coach I can hire there, I'll hire him on the way. Because 2.5 points, folks, there's your number. What John just said, 2.5 points in the second half, average of all those games. I get it. I like Gus. I want him to do well. But how do you defend that? How do you defend his record when it's 2.5 points? How do you justify that? You can't. You cannot. That's it.
All right. We got more questions.
Bring them on. Good. Let's go.
Joey Miller says, much as it pains me, the way the LSU game went from beginning to end was the beginning of the end for Gus, in my view. Of the AU grads I know, he has lost the vast majority of them. Who will be fired first, Jay Jacobs or Gus? Who is on the short list of Division I coaches with head coaching experience more than 3 years that Auburn can get? Mm. Regards, Joey Miller.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Joey, but we talked about it a little bit, and we're going to have to study this. I can't pull a name out of my head. I will say that that Scott Etheridge has been on the talking list for AD for years now.
Again, I'm going to say the same thing about AD, okay? I don't care if it's an Auburn person.
Right.
Okay. This isn't the 1975 athletic director position. Okay. This is a, you know, multi-hundred-million-dollar a year operation. Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Flow through there. I want more of a CEO person who understands, you know, long-range planning, how to manage the money and people. How to work in this digital age, having a good long range vision for the facilities, like that's and fundraising.
You're not sitting out
good
behind
hiring people. I don't want a good old boy.
You're not sitting out behind the Coliseum, divvying up cash in a cigar box and spray painting numbers on helmets like the ADs used to back in Jordan's day, right? I mean, this is a different world.
It's a different planet, and I want a modern AD who. You know, look, Florida just stole the AD from from Mississippi State, and Alabama just stole the AD from Arizona State, who was at Ole Miss or somewhere before that. Like, there are good young, you know, professional ADs out there that have good reputations and are sharp people. We need to go hire one of those people.
Yep.
And look, it can be done. Nebraska fired their AD a couple weeks ago because they're going to fire their head coach, and they hired an AD today. Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be done.
Let me go ahead and get our little blurb in here since we're just doing most of the questions here, and then we'll finish up our questions. I'm sure we still got quite a few, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord. All right, well, we can't be on here all night, but let's – yeah, I just want to just point out, I mean, we had very, very briefly gone over our goal on Patreon, but now we are back down considerably short of it again, and we appreciate what, you know, the people – have done. I'm assuming that was just like a one-time donation that kind of counted on there for a while and went away. And that's perfectly fine, no problem. But what it means is we still need your support. We still need, you know, members of the Auburn Wish, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone White Rocket family out there to come aboard and become a patron for as little as $1 a month. You have your name listed, mentioned on every episode of our shows that I'm about to do real fast. You will know that you're helping keep us on the air, help us to pay our bills. And as I always say, you know, when I write books, we make money. Everything else we do pretty much costs money. So this is how we keep the lights on in the Palatial White Rocket Studios and expand and do all these other shows and everything. So let me thank our patrons who exist now, and then hopefully you guys will go to patreon.com, or hey, you can go to the new www.plexico.net, P-L-E-X-I-C-O.net, and there's a link right there. I got several things where it says become a patron, become a supporter. You can just click on there. It takes you right to the page. So we got to thank, of course, Nicholas Cottrell and Joseph Fine. You guys really float the boat around here. And then Mick Vigicana, Timothy, Mike Finley, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Earl Ricks, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Dan Thompson, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Steve Harlan, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Richard Stevens, Andrew Barber, Wardam Wade, our one-time donors, Neil Dyer, and Derek Gunter, and a couple of other anonymous one-time donors. We appreciate you guys more than we can say. Join the family. Help keep us on the air. There's other benefits as well. You can learn all about what you get for free and what kind of things you have access to, including our power poll, which will be coming up shortly. I think it actually worked this week. And so you can get about, you can get to be part of all that by going to www.patreon.com and just search for Plexico, or like I said, just go to www.plexico.net and there's links there that takes you straight to it. All right, more questions. John and I decided to do the listener question format basically tonight because we knew we had a crap ton of questions, and we knew that, you know, they'd be covering the stuff we were going to talk about anyway. So this way we can just kind of be more efficient and not spend the whole second half of the show going, yeah, we already talked about that. Yeah, we already talked about that. So what else we got, John?
All right, next question is from Jared Albrick, who says he does his little write-up of the comic book version of each question.
Yeah, we like it.
And he says, this week, ridiculously easy write-up, Auburn versus LSU was Guy Gardner versus Batman. Like Guy Gardner, Auburn was way more powerful but way too confident.
Yeah.
Swinging for the fences for the big victory, Auburn lost their fundamental power source, and LSU's Batman stayed their course, punched Auburn right in the face, and knocked Auburn right out.
Yep. Yeah, it's fair. I hate to think that LSU's Batman, but dang it, it's true. It's fair.
All right. Our friend Derek from last week asked a good question. What one thing would you tell Malzahn he needs to do to improve the team?
You know what I'm going to say, don't you?
What?
Resign.
No. I would say do all the stuff you do to prepare the first half game plan and then do it all again and put that second one in a drawer and pull it out at halftime.
Hand over play calling to your offensive coordinator.
Yes, I would say that. Like, you literally are not allowed to have any input in the offensive game plan. Like, and it's a problem.
You're right. It's like what we used to say about Bobby Bowden. Keep the headphone on. Just unplug it.
Yeah, that's where we are. All right. This is from Steven AUNI. I know a lot of the blame is being on the coaches, but does Stidham have to shoulder some of it too? It seemed to me that Chip's drop back passing game always has a deep receiver, but I'm sure he works a route tree that would allow other receivers to get free in the intermediate short range.
Oh,
LSU doubled down after the first quarter and double covered the deep wide receiver. Surely this meant somebody would have been wide open on a short pass.
Gosh, yeah. Oh, except the one play. God, I just can't understand how they're this brain dead. The one play, they brought in Devin Barrett.
Oh.
And I saw number 5 trot out on the field, and I said, well, we all know what this play is going to be, and guess what? Pass to Devin Barrett. Guess what? Loses yards. Because, I mean, if you're LSU and you don't know that that ball's going to Devin Barrett, how stupid do you have to be?
They knew. I made a list of, like, what are the pattern of specific things that happen in these losses to Gus? And one of the things on the list is predictability. And it's not just the running thing. It's that kind of predictability. Like, we've seen the special packages that Gus has had over the last few years that are very predictable when he uses them more than once. And the Devin Barrett thing is there. Like, he is – I'm just going to throw it out there. We're overprotective of freshmen on offense, okay?
Yeah.
Go look at what George is doing with that freshman running back who's the third string guy. He's getting way more touches than any of our guys are, and he's making a difference. The Devin Barrett thing is stupid and predictable.
How many passing yards total did we have if you take away those two big plays, the Ryan Davis and the Will Hastings play? And by the way, the Ryan Davis play was a short intermediate pass that he took.
It was a screen pass. He threw it like 2 yards.
How many more did we do that after that?
I don't know, 80?
But I mean, I'm saying, how many more times did we run a play like that? I don't remember ever.
Oh, never.
But I mean, here's the thing. If you take away those two, the long, wide-open, busted coverage of Will Hastings that gave us a touchdown, and you take away that long pass by Ryan Davis that resulted in the touchdown, you take the, I think it was, if not a field goal. If you take those two away, how many receiving yards did we have the entire game?
I don't know.
64.
That's pretty bad.
Yep.
And again, like, receivers are terrible. I mean, I think the receivers were worse than in the Clemson game in this game.
Yeah.
They were bad. At blocking and catching, I thought they were really, really poor. I think they got totally dominated by LSU in this game.
How many receiving yards did Kerryon Johnson have?
Zero.
One. 1 yard.
Again, like, we ought to throw him the ball a lot.
Yep.
He's really good at it, and it would cause the defense problems. All right, more questions. Andy Frame says, if we go 8-4 with losses to Clemson, LSU, Georgia, and Alabama, it probably means Gus will be fired. Is that fair? Is it smart to fire a coach this year when there'll be many more coaching positions open? We kind of answered that.
Yes. How many yards per carry did Cameron Petway have?
One.
Like 1.8 on four attempts.
Let's deal with this now. He looked better. He did not look good.
No.
Okay? He should not have been in the game. Having said that, it was 100 degrees on that field. And Kerryon Johnson carried the ball like 20 times in the first half. So he clearly was not going to carry the ball 25 times in the second half. We needed to be spelling him and handing the ball to other people. Perhaps while the LSU defense was tired, that would have been a good chance to hand the ball to somebody like Cam Martin.
How many carries did Cam Martin get?
Zero.
Zero. What the heck?
Petway was healthier, and I get it. Like, he's an upperclassman. They trust him. He's telling them, please, coach, you got to put me in. I'm healthy. I'm ready. I'll play great. Put me in the game. And they put him in, okay? He looked better, but he clearly isn't close to being the same guy, and LSU was ready for him. He had one or two decent runs, and the rest of the time he got destroyed. So he was not an asset in that game. And we needed to play some of the younger running backs to spell Kerryon in the first half and the second half, and we didn't. And that the whole running back rotation thing is a gigantic failure by the coaching staff this year.
Joke.
All right. Next question is from Daniel Barnett. He says, he asks a long question about, could we still make it to the SEC championship game? Both,
no.
Basically, but
no.
All right, Mitchell Cox says, how much room for error does Gus have to keep his job realistically? As in, can he lose any more games and still be Auburn's coach next year, or is he already gone?
Oh, I mean, if we win all the games the rest of the way and we finish 10-2, yeah, but I mean.
But if he beats Georgia and A&M and loses to Alabama, it will be 9-3. I think he would still be the coach. I think at 8-4, there's a good chance he's still the coach.
Yeah, 9-3 for sure. Even though I'm not happy. 8-4 is 50-50. Just remember, I mean, Terry Bowden, and this is the whole thing I'm going to do before we're done if I have time. Terry Bowden put in 2 8-4 seasons at Auburn, and the athletic director came out in public and said 8-4 every year is not acceptable at Auburn. And that was in the 90s, before it even got as big as it is now. So if 8-4 is not acceptable for Terry Bowden, how is it acceptable for Gus Malzahn year after year? 8-4, 8-4, 7-5, 7-6, 8-4, or 8-5, or 8-5 now, not 8-4, 8-5. Terry's worst season that he finished wasn't as bad as any of Gus's seasons since the first year.
Yep. Paul Banks said there's a lot of noise about 17 runs on first downs. What's your take on that? I think it was dumb and predictable.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but yeah, it's ridiculous.
Nicholas Cottrell says, I imagine the whole who's going to replace Gus stuff has been emailed by 14 people, so I want to take a different tactic. Mm-hmm. John Avan, for purposes of this discussion, of this question, imagine you are actually Gus Malzahn. He says, I'll let you break to order some Waffle House to get in character. You have devoted your adult life to the sport of football. You've attained the role of head coach at one of the most storied programs in the sport. And every week, word gets back to you that a large portion of the fan base, and probably some people with actually say in the matter, would like to see you lined up at the unemployment office. Two questions. One, what positive things do you see across the three phases of the game, both versus LSU and across the whole season, that you think you could turn into real weapons capable of winning games? And two, let's answer that one first. What positive things do you see offense, defense, special teams?
Well, I like we got the players. We got players. We got Chip's working on it. We're going to get better. We're going to get better. I guarantee that. I can't stay in persona the whole time. I just can't do it. I mean, if I'm Gus, what would I say are the positive things that we have going for us? Is that essentially it?
What are the things that you think you've seen this season that you think you could take those things, offense, defense, special teams, to go, these three or four things are the core of what we're going to build around the rest of the season to make us win these games?
We've got a passing game if we can use it wisely. We've got a quarterback who can throw the ball extremely accurately, and we've got receivers that sometimes catch it. We were just praising how they caught the ball recently.
And I think that's exactly right. But the thing is, you can't run the ball all the time at first down and then pass when it's third and 10.
Right.
Because this passing game is not going to win in that situation.
No.
It's not that kind of passing game. So we have to pass the ball on first down. Because that's when the play action works. And LSU is walking a safety up to the line of scrimmage in the second half to help shut down the run. That's when you could do the play action and burn them and have a guy go by him, or even just do the play action and throw a little 5-yard out to the, heaven forbid, the tight end of the running back or something.
Yeah. For defense, I felt like the defense was getting real penetration and doing some good work up front in the first quarter when everything else was clicking. And it seemed like after the first quarter, even the defensive line wasn't getting a lot of push on him anymore, that he was having all day to run around and throw the ball.
I feel like we got a lot of penetration. We just didn't finish.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not making excuses to the defense. There were injuries on both sides of the ball. I mean, I had two injuries. You know, at one point in the game, we were missing two offensive linemen. But, we missed Trey Williams and we missed Matthews at safety.
Yeah.
And I think especially those two guys are leaders. And I think we missed him for that. And I think the play at safety really stepped off. We were concerned in the preseason about depth at safety. Do you remember those discussions?
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that showed. I mean, that long run on the end around, to LSU was a failure by the safety. And I think Daniel Thomas dropping the wide open interception was another one. So
I feel like we shut their running game down pretty well, but then just about everybody has.
Well, and again, like, how many points did the defense give up in the second half?
13.
In the second half?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The defense. Seven was by the special teams. The defense gave up six points after halftime.
Right.
So the defense had a bad first half, and they settled down and gave up two field goals. That's good enough to win.
Yeah.
I mean, the defense played one of their worst games of the year, and it was still good enough to win.
But you can't rely on that narrow margin. It's too easy to give up. I mean, we'd have beaten Florida State, for that matter.
Yes.
So you can't rely on that. You need to score more. You need to get more first downs. It's not all on the defense. The offense has to help the defense. We beat Georgia last year if we have any offense at all.
That's right. The biggest thing is, you know, it's funny. The best thing that Gus has done in the last 2 years is hire Kevin Steele and stay away from him.
Right. You know, the Auburn offense scored almost every point in that Georgia game last year for both teams.
All right. Here's the rest of Nicholas Cottrell's question. You know you're coaching for your job at this point. What's your strategy? He says, keeping in mind, I'm asking what you would do as Gus, not what you think Gus will do. Do you rest Petway and Johnson and try to unleash them against Georgia and Alabama? Do you try to rack up huge convincing wins now despite the long-term wear and tear to them and the team, assuming the fans will now expect us to drop the two big rivalry games?
Well, those are legitimate, you know, questions and things that are options. But what I would do if I'm Gus is just suddenly be freewheeling. I'm doing onside kicks. I'm shaking things up. I'm making it exciting again. I'm like, even if we lose, it's going to be fun to watch us lose. We're going to go fast. When was the last time we did that? Years ago. See, this is the thing that's really convinced me, really gotten me off the fabled bus, is that I've been defending a coach because I like what he does. And then one day it dawned on me that we don't do that anymore. The thing I've been defending, we haven't done in years.
We don't run pace. We don't run tempo.
No, not at all. I like Gus because he's a hurry up, no huddle. When was the last time we ran hurry up, no huddle for any length of time in a game of consequence?
2013.
Yeah.
Maybe 2014, but
we don't even do the cool Oregon extra point thing anymore. At least it was something fun, you know, even if we never actually did it.
Brett May says, why does Gus continue to do things that doesn't work over and over despite overwhelming evidence that it doesn't? It seems like there's a disconnect between what's happening on the field and what Gus thinks will work. And I think this goes back to, something we talked about a couple weeks ago about having a plan and failing to adjust, and how I like to plan my vacations and I had to adjust to, you know, the fact that we didn't always follow the plan.
Yeah.
And I think I truly believe Gus is like that. Like, he's like me, and like, he plans the game. He, like you're saying, he envisions it with the salt shakers and stuff. And in his mind, if the players execute, it'll work perfectly and we win.
Yeah.
But that's not how things work. And the other part is, again, I think everybody can see this. Gus has to let go of the offense and let Chip Lindsey run the offense. That gives us the best chance to win these games.
Can he
do that?
No. You know what he's saying when he says it's execution? He's saying, I had a great idea and the players screwed it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. 100%.
I mean,
100%. The salt shaker executed it.
Anybody who watches that game could see that we basically throttled down and played not to lose after we got ahead.
John, even the dang ketchup bottle is overweight, and it carried out its assignment.
Yeah.
The salt and pepper shakers are doing their job, John. They're executing.
We got a couple more questions.
That salt shaker's salty out there. That was for Jared. He likes it.
That was good. I really like that. Dan Maltaby says, will you have a ceremony inducting Van to Team John?
I think it's the other way around. Really... Well, that's what I'm saying. Everybody has it backwards. Everybody thinks that Team Van is like the pro Gus. They keep up, people. Try to keep up. We're doing one show a week here, okay? Try to keep up with the changing times. The times, they are a-changing. That would have been the title of this episode if I hadn't already used the title.
Auburn Tweep says, hashtag Team Van.
Yeah. Brother.
For a muse
of fire. I'm just hurrying along.
Josh Corbett says, "What happened in the second half?"
Blame yourself.
And War Kev says, "Can Auburn take care of business against after LSU loss, or will there be a hangover play against Arkansas?"
Yeah, that's what I'm really afraid of. I feel like Arkansas can either give us a winning season or make the whole thing spiral down the drain.
I think we're going to beat Arkansas. I don't think they're very good. I mean, the story today is that Austin Allen is not playing, that they're playing that huge quarterback that played against Alabama, who's not very good.
I haven't seen a second of Arkansas football this year, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, they're not as good as they were last year, okay? Number one, on defense especially, but at the skill at wide receiver, they had a couple of really good guys last year, and they're gone. And Allen, the quarterback, is still good, but you remember he took a beating last year, and this year he's taking more of a beating, and he's out. Yeah. And they played a quarterback against Alabama that, I'm not kidding, was like 6'4", 260.
Jared Lorenzen?
He was like that, except I think he runs a little bit. So, but he's not very good. I think we're going to beat Arkansas. And we may beat him convincingly, but it doesn't. Texas A&M, as you pointed out, is really good.
Yeah, I've been on their bandwagon all year.
Rusty Owen says, in a somewhat serious question, when the new AD hires Gus's replacement, is one question in the interview: will you keep Coach Steele?
Well, this is what happens every time. You know, when Pat Dye retired, they asked Terry Bowden, "Will you keep Wayne Hall?" Well, that worked out real well. I mean, it worked out for a couple of years, and then it all kind of went to poop. So it's what always happens is we have a head coach that's problematic, but we like our defense. It's like we just keep going full circle. It's like we're trapped in some Hindu time loop where we keep going back around and back around and back around. So when we hire Terry Bowden away from Akron, will he keep Kevin Steele, or will he, so that we can have a Bobby Bowden offense and a Gus Malzahn defense? Good gosh in heaven.
What the hell is the world coming to?
Auburn Elvis says, am I alone in thinking we should have won the LSU game?
No. I was pretty confident that we should have won it, although I didn't think we'd win it by about more than three.
Well, but looking at it again,
I still can't believe I nailed the Auburn score exactly.
But, I mean,
I just didn't see that punt return. Otherwise, I'd have the exact score.
I want to run down my list of – this relates to something that – I was talking about the patterns of things that fail in Gus losses, and I want to throw these out again because I've gone through the whole list. Offense struggling against good defenses, failure to make adjustments during the game, being too conservative, predictability. And predictability isn't just running the ball again and again and again, although we saw that on Saturday. Mm-hmm. But it's certain formations, it's certain things that you know what's coming and the other team knows what's coming too, like the Devin Barrett thing.
Mm-hmm.
Red zone problems. Again, this game, we kick field goals in the first half. We should have been scoring touchdowns. Okay. That was a problem.
That's exactly. Oh, we started kicking those field goals. I said, "Here we go, look out now. Here we go."
That was the biggest thing in the game. One of the biggest things was Auburn kicking field goals early in the game. We should not have kicked field goals. We should have been scoring touchdowns.
Because
it would not have been there.
Gus thinks we're going to be back in the red zone lots more times. So go ahead and get the field goals now. He doesn't seem to grasp. We all know. But he hadn't figured out yet that those first and early second quarter trips into the red zone where he says, oh, everything I planned is working fine, so let's go ahead and get our points now because we'll be back soon. We won't be back. We won't be back. This is it.
But again, in a couple of those places, I'm going to agree with Gus. They had things set up, and there's some failure to execute. On the first field goal series, that's the series where Stove dropped the touchdown pass, right, where where it sent him to a good pass. On the second series that led to a field goal, this is what happened, okay? We get it first and goal in the like the 10-yard line. Mm-hmm. Kerryon Johnson up the middle for for a loss of two. Mm. Penalty, illegal substitution on Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Then incomplete overthrew. He overthrew Hastings at the 5-yard line, like 10 feet over his head. Mm. False start on Auburn. Now it's 3rd and 21 a goal to go. We threw a screen pass. It was incomplete. Kicked a field goal. So, again.
Yeah, you kicked the field goal there, but I'm just saying, I mean.
But those were not the best plays. We shouldn't have started out running the ball up the middle of the Kerryon.
Right.
And those were execution problems when Gus thinks about it. That's the kind of thing that he's going to think about. But we still, you know.
Let's do our three best remaining questions.
Oh, we're down to the end here. Theodore Roosevelt says, why God? and I want to take the... Wait, play that again?
Please clap.
I want to take this moment to encourage Auburn fans not to, you don't have to avoid the game like Van is going to do this weekend, but to get outside, enjoy the fresh fall air. You know, maybe you could go out early in the morning and you'd see some geese or ducks migrating south. The weather is turning chillier here in Virginia. We have a cold snap starting tonight. You know, maybe you could go out and go for a hike in the woods or something. And like you did, gather some pumpkins or spend some time with your family. And the one thing I would tell all those people is when you do that, put the phone down, okay? Mm-hmm. Get away from the computer, walk away from Twitter, because for Auburn fans, it's a bit of a stirring cesspool at times.
Yeah.
There's kind of a swirling negativity, that, especially after a loss. Like after a game, get away from it. Like you're saying, go watch a movie, go do something else.
We had to, yeah.
And it's not going to help you to stay there. It's not going to make you feel better about the game or yourself or anything else. So you have to get away from those things.
Good advice from Dr. John.
And I'm just telling you, like, the results are still going to be what the result is going to be, but you as an individual will feel better.
My Illinois wife is very patient and understanding up to a point. But she runs out of patience on stuff that just seems silly to her very quickly. I mean, you know, you and I understand it. And, you know, your wife, being from down there, at least understands it, you know, even if she probably doesn't have much more patience than mine does, I bet. But my wife, after a certain point, is just like, grow up, get over it. Let's go, you know, to the movie. Let's go pick some pumpkins. Let's just do something else. Don't be a child. Don't be emotional about it. It's a stupid football game. It's a bunch of kids. And I'm like, yeah, you're exactly right. And off we go. So then I get on Twitter at 2:30 in the morning and start saying my piece when everybody else is safely asleep. But yeah, no, so that's exactly right. That's good talk. Good talk, John.
That's what I'm here for. So I think it's time to do Around the SEC.
Let's do it.
Take a trip around the SEC.
All right, maybe I'll do a newsletter with if you want to see my Terry Bowden comparison, we've talked on and off about this the last couple of years, but the meat of it, just very quickly, very simply, is they both started big and things trailed off for both of them. And you know, Terry was 21-1 after 22 games. After 22 games, Gus was 19-3. Those are both sparkling records. But over the next two seasons for Terry, Auburn went 16-8, and he was out of there pretty much. Over the next two seasons for Auburn, for Gus, Auburn has gone 15-11. And for Terry, it started with that weird draw with Georgia in 94. For Gus, that weird loss to Texas A&M in 2014, 20 years almost exact to the date later. Terry ended up 47-17-1 and was gone. But remember, he started 20-0. So after the first 20 games, the rest of his record was 27-17-1. Gus, the last... after the first 20 games, is 23, 17. So Gus actually has the same number of losses as Terry, but four fewer wins than Terry Bowden when he was fired. So there you go.
That's good. We got too busy talking about the red zone thing, and I left off a couple things in my patterns about Gus failures.
Okay.
Running back rotation decisions.
Mm-hmm.
With this season and certainly the Georgia game last year, we are no longer special on special teams.
We're not special.
Auburn fans are deceived because we have a great kicker into thinking that we're good on special teams, but we're not.
We're not special.
Go back and look at the games we've lost. How about that Texas A&M field goal block a couple years ago, or that LSU punt returner, some of the other Vanderbilt special teams plays, the Georgia kickoff return for a touchdown, those kind of things. Like, other teams do that to us. We're not doing that to other teams.
No, we're not.
And we're not stopping them from doing it all the time.
We rarely run a kickoff past the 25.
No, and I like that we got Noah Igbinoghene back there, but he doesn't bring it out.
No.
And it's not on him. And then poor wide receiver play. It's a continuing pattern. So, all right. So this week around the SEC, South Carolina beat Tennessee 15-9. Mississippi State beat BYU 35-10. Ole Miss crushed Vandy 57-35. A&M beat Florida 19-17. Alabama crushed Arkansas 41-0, and Georgia beat Missouri 53-28.
I got to tell you, John, I didn't know any of those scores until you said them just now. I had no idea if Texas A&M beat Florida. I had no idea how bad Alabama beat Arkansas. Let me ask you one thing, though. You talk about the kickoff returns. What is the purpose of having one guy catch the ball and the other run over and demonstrably semaphore for him not to run? I mean, they never say run, so why do they do the pantomime?
I think if you're 6 yards deep in the end zone, you should kneel. Okay, yeah, I don't care if you're Gales.
Why do you coach the other guy to run over and make a whole production out of don't run out of the end zone? I mean,
these are 18-year-olds and their brain is thinking, I'm going to score.
Yeah.
I got the ball and I'm going to score.
Okay. All right.
There's nothing but grass in front of me.
Yeah. Okay. I just always wonder. Why not just if we're never going to run it out, then why don't you just tell the guy catch it and take a knee instead of catch it and then look to the other guy who will run over and wave frantically for you not to run? I mean, when does he ever come over and say, yeah, let's go?
Well, see, if he doesn't do that, he should just – when that happens, he's out blocking somebody. He's running to the end zone and he's blocking, and he's like, follow me.
It's just weird.
So the kickoff rules did change a couple of years ago. They went from the 20 to the 25, if you down it, and they moved up the 5 yards where you kick off from. So there's a lot more kicks into the end zone.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we have some guys back there who could do some damage, and we don't ever give them a shot. So –
South Carolina beat Tennessee. Jones is done, right?
Yeah, he's done. He's 100. I mean, again, they didn't fire him this week because they're playing Alabama in the CBS game.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's gonna be pretty.
Yeah. So, but I mean, he's done, and everybody knows it. So Tennessee's 100% gonna be firing a coach. Every other SEC school is still a maybe, but that's the one that's 100%. And A&M, Florida was a game. It was a back and forth game. And Kellen Mond made some plays in that game. Christian Kirk did. But Florida is not good. I'm just going to let – Florida's quarterback situation is terrible. And their defense is several steps down.
That's why when LSU beat them, I wasn't surprised because I thought LSU is not as horrible as people think. Georgia almost lost to Troy last year. It's not that big of a deal, honestly. Hell, we almost lost to Mercer. These little teams are not that bad.
Yeah.
And I mean, when LSU went and beat Florida, I thought, okay, this tells me that we need to take LSU a lot more seriously than we are. That was a big part of why I had it 23-20.
All right, so we did a poll of our Patreon friends online, and here's the results. We ranked the SEC teams in kind of a power poll. And I'm going to do it 1 to 14. Are you ready?
Here we go.
All right. Alabama, Georgia, Texas A&M, LSU, Auburn, Florida, South Carolina, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Missouri.
That sounds very good. I think that's a very accurate poll.
I'd have Kentucky a couple spots higher, but...
I think they haven't played anybody.
I might switch Florida, Kentucky, honestly, but other than that, it's pretty good.
Did they have Florida ahead of Kentucky or Florida behind? They had
Florida, like, sixth, I think.
Well, Florida beat Kentucky.
Ahead of South Carolina and Kentucky.
I'd have South Carolina ahead of Florida.
Yeah. So that's the one I think we're a little higher on. But overall, it's interesting.
That was good. That was good. We appreciate all of our patrons out there participating. I'm glad that you guys – we had a good turnout, didn't we?
Yeah, 13 people. So we're going to do that again.
Excellent. Very good.
All right. Next week's SEC games, Tennessee at Alabama, Kentucky at Mississippi State, LSU at Ole Miss, the Ed Orgeron returns to Ole Miss game, and Idaho at Missouri.
Oh, that's going to set football back a few years. That's not pretty. Let's see. I'm going to have to go with, I want to say Kentucky at Mississippi State seems like a game. That's some bad games.
It is a terrible week of SEC football, really. Because, yeah. I mean. Auburn, Arkansas is the SEC network game, but. It's not. I mean, there's some other good college football games on.
What's the ESPN game? LSU Ole Miss?
Tennessee Alabama is the CBS game. It may be LSU Ole Miss, but like the night again, the big national night games are Southern Cal, Notre Dame, and Michigan at Penn State.
Okay.
So
you know,
I'm going to be watching those after our game is over.
I'm not going to be watching any games. So what time is our game? I don't even know.
It's the 6:30 Central, 7:30 Eastern on SEC Network.
I'm going to say...
My cold, dead hands.
Lock of the week.
Is that I will not be watching any of these.
Hey. I
picked a good week to ignore.
I must say this, but also I love college football. So I actually went back a couple hours later, turned the TV back on. I watched the second half of Southern Cal, Utah, and I watched the beginning of... And the other thing I would say to Auburn fans who think, you know, Gus Malzahn is a completely clueless idiot is Clemson lost at Syracuse, unranked. Washington lost at Arizona State, unranked. And Washington State lost at Cal,
got
unranked.
Got killed by Cal. I watched that game. I couldn't believe it.
So, I mean, all three of those were games where, you know, teams that were ranked higher than Auburn or about the same level with Auburn got lost on the road to unranked teams.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't think anybody thinks that Peterson or Dabo Swinney are idiots today. So,
you know what I'm looking
at? The pattern of behavior with Gus is different.
Yeah. You know what I'm looking forward to this weekend is the Circuit of the Americas. The United States Grand Prix is in Austin, Texas. And I'm looking forward to seeing my boy Max Verstappen and his stable mate on the Red Bull team, Daniel Ricciardo, out there for the Red Bull team against the Mercedes and the Ferraris. It's a done deal. Lewis Hamilton is the champion, just waiting for the crown. Ferrari has collapsed like a Gus Malzahn offense, and I'm just hoping Max can be a spoiler. So I'm all excited for the big race this weekend. I wish IndyCar wasn't already over. But I did get my Gateway 500 renewal form in the mail today. So we're going back next fall for another awesome IndyCar race right here in our home area. It's fantastic. You probably got a bunch of NASCAR in your area, don't you?
There is a NASCAR track in Richmond, but I don't go to that. I have no interest. So.
Yeah, I'm not a NASCAR person at all, even though I grew up 15 minutes from Talladega. I'm not into NASCAR. I'm not into the Fred's 500.
It was a good discussion tonight. A lot of good listener questions. We thank everybody for their questions. I think it really helped shape our discussion, and we decided we were going to get away from the traditional format and just answer those. I think it was good.
It was do this or
smoke weed every day.
and I'll say this.
It's the most useful sound bite I've ever gotten.
You may get some more use out of that when the season's over.
I think I will.
If we lose, certainly if we lose to Arkansas, but if we lose to Texas A&M in a couple weeks when we go out there, because we have a week off after Arkansas, if we lose to A&M, then I will come into that podcast with a list of potential replacement coaches.
There it is. You heard
you
it, folks.
You can write that. I will have the
Hold
list
it.
At that point.
Hold
you can write it down.
So when we lose to Texas A&M, you will be armed with your list. You have in your – Senator, I have in my hand a list of 15 known potential Auburn football coaches.
If we lose to A&M. I'm not sure that's a done deal.
So when we lose to A&M, you'll be ready. This is like a bridge too far. This is like that scene in A Bridge Too Far when he's like, should I prepare something if it succeeds? Of course, General, when it succeeds. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Jesus. Okay.
If we lose to A&M, I'll have a list. But I would also tell Auburn fans to mentally and emotionally prepare yourselves for
smoke weed every day.
Whatever you got to do for the possibility that Gus Malzahn is our coach next year.
Yeah.
Prepare yourself, okay? Because
dispel once and for all with this fiction.
However much we hate the result of this game. You know, if he beats A&M and finishes 8-4, Georgia and finishes 9-3, he's going to be the coach next year, I think.
It's true.
And you're going to have to prepare yourself for that. Like, I think people have already mentally and emotionally moved on, and it's going to be real hard for them next year when he's still the coach potentially. So I think you have to.
Yeah, we'll see.
I understand wanting the change because of this pattern of behavior, but I think you have to prepare yourself for the other option. So
yeah, I think that's true in theory, but only in theory. I think in practice it's wise words in theory, but in practice I don't think it's going to be relevant. We'll see. John, it's time is up. Any last thoughts?
Enjoy the fresh air.
All right, folks, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of?
Hang in there.
Good job. I'm surprised how positive I was tonight, honestly. I'm much more you did not want to hear talk to me on Saturday night or Sunday. It would have not been pleasant.
Hey.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
All right. Go to bed.
Night.